Are you always tired of being busy during the holiday season? Do you sometimes feel that there's too much going on? Well, too bad, because in today's episode of Middle Age Gaming 2020's The Game Show, we're going to be covering some of our favorite in-game special events. Today's games include The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, Monster Rancher, Warhammer Dawn of War 2, Monster Hunter, Life is Strange, and Final Fantasy XIV. So, what are you waiting for? Tune in now and we'll throw in a free episode next week.
Hello, middle-aged gamers, and welcome back to another episode of The Game Show. Today is episode 10, Eventful Events. And today we're going to be talking about gaming events, and my part is going to be about single-player gaming events because I rarely ever play multiplayer events. And Adam, what are you going to be talking about?
I do have one single-player game. However, the other two will be focused on multiplayer because that's a really big thing with live service these days, is to have games that have events to keep people engaged and keep them coming back. So I've got two of those for you guys.
So Adam, to fill our listeners in, how did you come up with the topic today?
Well, I mean, given that we are currently experiencing real world events, given that it is the holiday season, I mean, we just had Halloween and then Thanksgiving, either, you know, Canadian Thanksgiving or American or South African or whichever country. Hanukkah is coming up. Christmas is coming up. I'm not sure when Kwanzaa is, but I'm sure that's going to be pretty soon because I know it's around this time of year. So, and then New Year's. So yeah, we are currently in the real world event season. So we're going to be doing the gaming world event episode.
Sure, why not? And with that awesome filler, we're going to pass it on to my first event, which is Elder Scrolls Skyrim. So if you don't know what this game is about, I'm not going to talk about that today. Today, I'm going to talk about events in the game, or maybe talk about this game a little bit briefly. So I have talked about this game before. It is an RPG game released by Bethesda Studios and on November 11th, 2011, an old game. Action game. Why this game? I mean, I think for me, in my gaming experience, and I've been gaming for 30 years, is that this game was the first game, and definitely not the first Elder Scrolls game, where the events in my gaming experience felt meaningful. And in the script for today, I talk about an event in the game, right? Everybody knows this intro. The intro is very famous. You're sitting in the cart. You're about to die because they're going to chop off your head for doing something or the other. I can't remember. Adam probably remembers, though.
You're trying to cross the border.
Oh, okay. Yes. See?
Trying to cross the border,
wonderful
eh?
Memory. And then before you die, you know, a dragon interrupts and you're like, wow, this is so cool. And especially in 2011, like, oh my God, this looked amazing. The dragon interrupting it and setting fire to everything, and you get to run away and you get to make choices about which side you side with. And but definitely the first big event was the time you learn your first, I kept saying dragon call. I could not for the life of me remember what the actual terminology is, but
Thum.
Yeah. Oh, the Thums.
The voice.
Jesus Christ, dude. Whatever medicine you take for memory, you got to give that to me.
I need to figure out what medicine I'm taking for memory.
So the Thums, and the first Thum, right, is the one that allows you to sort of telekinetically push things back. And
Foos.
It gives, go ahead.
Foos. Foos Roda. Oh, Foos is the first one.
Yes.
I played a lot of Skyrim.
It gives you such a, like an agency, a sense of power. And it's sort of like a meaningful event, like in a game where in typical RPGs, you start off in the beginning and you sort of like, you're sort of weak. But immediately in Skyrim, this first major event, you get this awesome, cool, like supernatural power. Because, I mean, in the beginning of the game, you're walking around, you're seeing regular people, archers, swordsmen. And this is the game where it's like, oh my God, I'm the Dragonborn. I have this innate, awesome, fantastic power that I get to use. And that's it. I think it really stands out. I mean, not just that, another sort of minor event for me anyway was the end fight, because I was the person in the game. I followed a very particular build and I ended up having this awesome armor and awesome sword. So when I fought the final dragon at the end of the game, I was like, oh, that wasn't difficult. But it was still cool. Lots of really cool events, and they make this game really, I think, stand out forever. I wouldn't be surprised if this comes out as a remastered edition for the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X next year.
Yeah, if they did that, I might have to pick it up, because I did not get the remastered for the PS4, but I tend to skip generations. Yeah, I remember one of my favorite events that I thought was interesting was a quest line. I think it was in what's the city of the North? Solitude, I think.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, I think it's Solitude where they have, it's like an ancient king, and you kind of, they used to have this festival, and you have to go through and do all the stuff to prepare for this festival, and then when you're done, then they have this kind of big feast thing, and then in game, I think it's either every week or every month, they actually go through and redo this festival, so it becomes kind of an actual kind of little holiday in the game that occurs from time to time. I thought that was a really cool touch, especially considering that they tell you which day it is, they tell you which month it is, and then they don't capitalize that on too much. You know, they don't really have seasonal shifts, and they don't really have the regular events in that sense. So
yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And like you said, the remastered edition is a good point, because right now, I mean, if you buy Skyrim on Steam or whatever you want, and like Adam, if you watched our show last week, he mentioned that while the Black Friday sales are over, Christmas sales are coming, if not already starting soon or in the next week or so. You can get the remastered, I wouldn't call it remastered, you can get the Skyrim Complete Edition. You get all the DLCs, all the extra armors. And then on top of that, you get to put on all the mod packs and stuff. So you'll really be able to. And then there's so much extra content that add extra, you know, awesome single player events as well.
Yeah, that's one debate that I'm having with myself is when Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, do I want to get it on consoles like I've been doing, or do I want to go back and get it on PC just for the mod community? Because there's so much modding you can do that you cannot do on consoles. So, but that's where
modding is also going to take time. That us middle-aged gamers. That's why, I mean,
yeah,
I've always wanted to reinstall the remastered edition. I haven't done so because I know if I did, it would at least take me. I mean, it has become simplified. There are like streamlined installers, but it would take time, and they'd have to do it on a holiday. Like, okay, this is a holiday. I'm going to install the remastered plus mod it. And then when I go back to work, this will be my weekly gaming.
Ah. So I know they did the remastered on consoles. On PC, are there actually two versions, the original and a remastered version? Or is it just the original with higher settings?
So there is a remastered version, and I think it has replaced. When it first came out, they didn't. But I think now you cannot find the original game on Steam.
Okay, because yeah, on PC it wouldn't really make sense to have these two versions, right?
Exactly.
It would just make sense to just do the one.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Cool.
Now, yeah, so one last question. If you do get it on PC, so obviously this was originally designed for PCs back in 2011. Now, we've had significant progress in the PC world in the last 9 years. If you got the remastered version, is that going to still be able to run on old PCs, or are you actually going to need by now, even the remastered is kind of old, but are you going to need kind of a nicer PC, or is a potato really going to run it?
Just like what you said, even at the moment, a remastered version will still run on an old PC. I mean, if your PC's from the time of the remastered version is not that much. It's still extremely scalable. You can still turn setting down. You can still play it at 720p if you want to play it at 720p. So it's very doable. If you had a PC from 2011, it'll still run in it.
Yeah, because I know people now granted my parents aren't exactly middle-aged, but you know, they don't upgrade their computer but every 6 years or so. So I mean, odds are if they had a computer, it could be from back in 2014 or 15. So that should still be able to run it pretty well.
Oh, no problem at all.
All right. Excellent, excellent, excellent. And I guess that'll bring me to my first one. Monster Farm is the Japanese name. The Western name is Monster Rancher. So this game is a little bit old, but I really enjoyed the events in it. So as I mentioned with, I can't remember the name, Skyrim, they do technically have months, they have days of the week, they have this whole year cycle, and they never capitalize it on it like other games do, where they have seasonal shifts and all that. Now Monster Rancher, though, does, and that's pretty good considering that this is a really old game. The original one came out in 1997 on the original PlayStation. And I think their last major entry came out in, I don't quite remember, but it was on the PS2. So they haven't had a major entry in a long time. Now they've had, I think, NDS. They've had an NDS version. They've also had an Android and an iOS version, but that didn't do very well. So the mainline entries, you haven't seen anything since the PS2 era. Now, this is made by Tecmo, now Koei Tecmo. But basically, the idea is it was kind of a Pokemon contender. I mean, it came out in 1997. That's roughly around the time that Pokemon came out. And the idea was that you train a monster, and then it gets bigger, older, stronger. You take it to these tournaments. And then eventually, unlike Pokemon, your monsters do age and they do kind of peak, and then they start to decline and they get weaker and they get older, and eventually they may even die. So unlike Pokemon, where you're supposed to kind of build your ultimate team, here you're actually consistently training new monsters and retiring old monsters and that sort of thing. And it was really interesting because it was on the PlayStation, and it really capitalized on the fact that the PlayStation was the first disc-based console. Because what you could do is you would go to a temple, you would open up the PlayStation, take out the disc, pop in any other kind of CD that you had, close it, it would read the data on that CD, and then based on that data, it would generate some kind of monster. So basically, your disc would be, or could act as almost like the DNA sequence of a monster. And then you would take that disc out, put Monster Rancher back in, and continue playing. And yeah, it would create all sorts of monsters. And basically every monster has two aspects. It's got its physical aspect, which is going to be basically the shape of its monster. And then it's got a secondary aspect, which is going to kind of affect the color of it. And maybe a few little aspects, like does it have wings or something like that. And that was a huge mechanic in it as well, because after you had your monster, you could actually breed some of your monsters, and they would combine to create a new monster, which would take one of the two aspects of each. So, for example, in the picture we have here, the big guy, the one giant-eyed thing you can see right there in the front, that's called a Swayzo. And that yellow, since he's yellow, that's going to be a pure Swayzo. His type is Swayzo Swayzo. And behind it, you can kind of see a green-looking dinosaur that's called a Saurian. So you could have, if you took a Swayzo and a Saurian, you could either get a yellow Saurian with one eye, so it's primarily Saurian, secondary Swayzo, or you could get a Swayzo that's kind of green and scaly looking, so it's primarily a Swayzo, secondary is a Saurian. So you can combine that, and then if you combine that with something else, it would take either the Swayzo half or the Saurian half, and then it would combine that with one of the two aspects of the other monsters. So there was a lot of breeding going on and stuff like that. But events were really important because this game, you know, if you're playing Pokemon, what you're supposed to do is go through, go to the gyms, fight the gym leaders, and then you win. In Monster Hunter, they have tourneys. And so the game basically has a year cycle, and you can look at your calendar in game and it will tell you exactly which in-game day the tournaments are going to be, or which weeks they're going to be. And then what you do is basically you can prep your monster, getting ready for those weeks, you know, so you can train it really hard and let it rest the week before, so it's nice and energetic. Or so it's kind of like how you might train a boxer, you know, with their regimens, and you know, when do they rest, when do they continue working hard, when do you get them to train in this way, when do you get them to train in that way. And then when the tourneys arrive, then you can enter your monster, and if you win, you can get certain prizes. And depending on the tournament that you enter, you actually can get different prizes. So, and then these will cycle throughout the year. So if you miss it, you can just wait until the next year and then try again in the next year. And given that monsters do age, you know, you might, it's almost like the Olympics where, you know, you're planning this monster. You might have to plan ahead. Like, I really want to win this tournament, so I really have to plan, you know, when is the monster roughly going to be born? What age is it going to be when this tournament arrives? Will it be in peak physical condition? Will it be, you know, will it live long enough to survive for that tournament to come again? Or, you know, which other tournaments can I put it into? So, yeah, I thought it was a really kind of cool little thing, and it added a little bit of realism there. So, yeah, that was, I thought, a really cool way to do in-game events and kind of give it a little bit of replay value, because you are constantly experimenting with new monsters and trying new things.
It's really cool. I mean, like, when I saw the picture on our Google Drive, I was like, that art is kind of cool, and it really makes me think that a lot of older games have some really cool, interesting mechanics that implemented in new games would be really, really awesome, really, really fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, how long did you play this for? Or, like, what was the length of this game back in the day?
technically the game, there was no real end game per se. Technically the end game was you were trying to achieve, there were two really big monsters that were basically the equivalent of the legendary monsters in Pokemon. One was Mu, which was a big dragon, and the other one was the Phoenix. And basically, once you had acquired those monsters, you had, quote unquote, finished the game, because at that point, it was just more of the same. There was nothing really higher to achieve. So those were kind of the ultimate goals. But based on just the way the gameplay was, it didn't really have an end, because, you know, it would just be year after year after year. You just continuously train monsters and train new ones and stuff like that. So there's no real end game to it. It was kind of interesting in that sense. And there's not really a story too much. There's a slight bit of the story in the sense that as you progress, they'll kind of open up new things and they'll explain like, oh, well, we've discovered this new mine. You know, maybe you could explore it with one of your monsters or something like that. So there are kind of small events like that, but there's no overarching story. Your character has no backstory. They have, you know, you're always looking at things technically from your first person point of view. You never see your own individual character. You just kind of walk up to a monster and you see the monster standing in front of you. So yeah, there wasn't really an end.
What do you think they've never remade the game?
I think the original one actually did pretty well, and that's why they did the second one. The second one, I think, did a little bit better than the first one. The third one did not do quite as well as the first two. And if I remember correctly, I think the third one was on PS2, but they actually changed a bit. So in the third one, I think you couldn't combine monsters, or you couldn't get them from distance. There was some main mechanic that they had done away with in the third one, and that was not popular. And so the third one did not do well. They came out with the fourth one. Fourth one did better, but by that point, you know, Pokemon was really in its prime, and you know, it already had the Game Boy Advance versions. There was, I think, Pokemon, you know, I don't remember if it was the second or third generation at that point. So I mean, they just had a huge list of Pokemon. Their overall, the variety was a lot higher in Pokemon, because you did have, I think, what, 300 plus Pokemon at that point. Whereas in Monster Rancher, you have, I think, maybe 20, 25 different types, and you can combine them in all sorts of different ways. So maybe in the long run, you have more variety, but, you know, there's just 25 varieties of Swayzo, 25 varieties of Gollum, 25 varieties of Pixie. So I think in that sense, and then also because Pokemon was on Game Boy, so Pokemon was kind of the mobile gaming of its time, and Monster Rancher was only on PS2. So I think that kind of limited it in terms of where people were playing it and whatnot. So I think that was part of it. And then there were rumors that they might bring it back when the PlayStation Vita came out. A lot of people wanted them to bring it out on the Vita, because they were saying, well, now games don't usually use discs anymore. Now we're using digital download a lot. That would kill one of the major mechanics of the game, because that was the thing, is putting in a disc, reading it, generating a monster off of it. So people were coming up with all sorts of ideas like, well, maybe since the PS Vita has a camera, you could read it off of barcodes or generate it based on QR codes. You know, so if it looks at a QR code, it would be like, oh, okay, let's generate a monster based on that data. So there were some rumors that they might bring it back, but they never did. But yeah, so supposedly they said that they were going to re-release the original, kind of a remastered version, or at least a kind of an updated slightly version, this year, 2020, but I have not seen any release dates, and we're pretty much near the end at this point. So I don't know if that idea has been scrapped or postponed. So, but I really loved this series, and I would absolutely love if they brought it back.
I'd be interested too. I'd love to see. I mean, as I get older, I like new art, and this art looks awesome.
Yeah, well, you should check out the cartoon. They had a cartoon much like Pokemon did, which was not as successful as Pokemon. So it only ran, I think, one season, but
it makes me interested, like, as a future topic, franchises that destroyed innovation in other games, like Pokemon sort of limited Yu-Gi-Oh! And Digimon and other stuff, you know, and that sort of limited the innovation in that sense.
And Overwatch took over? So Battleborn basically died because of Overwatch.
Battleborn and, I mean, other stuff, It's, and then the other side of it is like, despite these other games, CSGO is still a thing for however many years.
Yeah, Team Fortress.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
All right, moving on to my second game. My second game is Dawn of War 2. Dawn of War 2 is not a game that has, well, this Dawn of War is very different from Dawn of War 1. In Dawn of War 1, it was a typical RTS game. You built bases, you had units, you pumped guys out of your, you know, your quote-unquote barracks and your mechanized infantry building and stuff. But Dawn of War 2 was different in that you had no base building. You just had guys that would sort of run around, and you had a captain, and you had Thaddeus. He's the guy who was the captain of the assault marines, and he had two sort of regular assault marines with him. You had a guy, a Devastator, and he was a Devastator marine. And he had two other Devastator marines, and this was sort of like integrated strategy and RPG elements, and skill trees and equipment and gear and stuff. And it was really cool. I mean, I loved RTSs. I haven't played an RTS in forever. But why this game was so cool was just at the end of this game, right, you're fighting, you know, the Xenos or the aliens, as bad as this political philosophy is, you're fighting, destroying all the things that are not human, pretty much. And in the end of the game, you're fighting the Horde, which is sort of like the equivalent of the Zerg in StarCraft or like aliens and stuff. And it's literally, let's see, you've got 12 guys versus hundreds of enemies and of different sizes. And some of these enemies, like your space marines, even though if you've ever read any of the Warhammer books, space marines are above 7 feet in height. They're genetically engineered. They have multiple redundant organs. They just... the superior form of human beings. And despite that size, they're fighting aliens that are like 14 feet in high. And it's just impressive. But in this final battle, it's you guys fighting the Horde and the guys coming from anywhere. And you're just like clicking rapidly and deploying special powers and doing this guy to fight with this guy. And you feel this sort of immense stress as you're doing this. You're like, okay, everybody stay alive. Nobody die. Don't die. Don't die. Don't die. And you eventually, you know, I won't spoil what happens in the end, but it is just like the most critical event I've ever felt, most tense event I've ever felt in a game, combined with the music, which we will talk about in our after the show. We're talking about memorable music in gaming. I have the soundtrack of this game, and it has a really awesome atmospheric battle soundtrack, especially for that last stage that I listened to even... later on. I mean, this game came out quite a while ago. It came out on February 19, 2009. It was published by THQ on Windows, Mac OS, and Linux. And basically, if you're someone who likes strategy games, if you like RPG games, definitely something to give this a go. It comes with a bunch of DLC now. Unfortunately, when they released Warhammer Dawn of War 3, they did it in sort of like a MOBA way, because MOBAs were sort of hip at the time. But loads of people didn't like it, and it did particularly badly. So I'm not even sure if number 4 is going to be made. I hope they do, and I hope they go, or at least maybe do a 4 where you can be an RTS game and also be a sort of like the RPG third-person action game in a sense. I think both of those would be good. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, when I saw the title, I mean, I know a bit about Warhammer, but I'm not super, super into it. I have friends that really are, though. So I saw Warhammer Dawn of War. I was thinking Warhammer the Fantasy, not Warhammer 20K. I didn't realize that it was the 20K version. Or 40K, sorry. 40K, right? Yeah. So I didn't realize that. Yeah, it seems kind of interesting. So this is... I've played StarCraft. And there's a mission in StarCraft where you start off and it's like Jim Raynor and a couple other guys. And it's basically like that one mission where you start off with a set number of characters. It's not like a typical StarCraft, Warcraft kind of thing.
Exactly.
Okay. That's kind of interesting. Now, do you know why they did that? Does it make it more story focused because you have set characters, or?
It does make it more story focused. It does make it more intense, and you feel more attached to the characters as well, because these guys, they have voiced lines in the game, and each guy has like a very distinct voice and a distinct attitude about combat, about the story, about what's happening. And it makes it more interesting as opposed to a typical RTS game where you're sort of like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And you're just sort of clicking and moving units around and positioning units in battle. It was, for me, it was a great change. I still miss the RTS version. The first RTS version was pretty awesome. But yeah, it lends a greater connection to the game.
Is there a permadeath if you lose a character, or they just come back in the next round, or...?
You can lose, each character has their own sort of battalion or platoon of guys. You can lose those guys, but you cannot lose the main character. If you lose the main character, game over.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I see.
So these guys have to carry on all the way up until that final mission that I talked about.
Okay. But their little dudes under them can die left and right.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Because I mean, you guys are on the, if you played Warhammer Gothic Armada or Gothic Armada 2, you're on these giant spaceships filled with thousands of space marines traveling around the universe, exterminating aliens. Again, that's not good, but...
In the case of the Tyranids, there might be an argument for it.
Yes, yes, yes. So, I mean, the smaller guys are replaceable. Main characters are not replaceable.
Okay. Yeah, Warhammer is a funny beast. I mean, obviously, it's super, super, super successful as a desktop game. And from what I've heard, the books do really, really well, too. But they just never seem to break into the video game, I guess, ecosystem very well, in the sense that they'll come out with a game and it'll be okay and passable, but it just kind of fizzles. And then they try another. They keep trying, but they keep changing up the formula because they just haven't found that golden goose or the golden formula to make it work. It's kind of an interesting thing, because I have friends like that love Space Hulk and those sort of games, but they're very niche and they'll make one and then they're kind of like, it didn't really work out, let's switch to another game, and they'll make something else. Or, and I remember there was one, I don't remember which game it was, I think it was on PS3, I played the demo for it because my friends were really, really excited for it, but there was a demo for a third person action game in the Warhammer 40k universe, and they made that game, and then I guess it kind of, people were like, oh, it was really fun in the demo, but then when you played the full game, it basically was just, wasn't that much more. It was just kind of bare bones, I guess. So what you saw in the demo is basically what you're going to be doing for the entire game.
I played that and I finished it. I thought that was an awesome game, very much in the vein of Godfall. Lots of like really cool action, but very simple. I understand why people didn't like it. Not a lot of complexity. It was sort of like an action smashing game.
Yeah.
It was fun for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm not a huge 40K fan, but I'm 40K adjacent, and that I know a lot of people that are. So I have probably more knowledge than your average nobody, but yeah, I'm not as in depth to it. I know it's got a lot of lore with all their gods and magic and science fiction and orcs being made of mushrooms and stuff like that. So
there's a bunch of new 40K games coming out. I might do a little bit of a thing about that later on. Coming out 2021.
Okay. That would be fun. Maybe I'll have to pick up a 40K game. We can do a 40K episode.
Sure, sure, sure.
All right.
So what is your second game?
So my second game is going to be Monster Hunter World. Okay, so we went from Monster Rancher to Monster Hunter. I assure you the third game is not monster related in title. So this is published by Capcom, which is why I can't show you a video, because they're pretty persnickety about that sort of thing. So anyway, Monster Hunter World released on the PS4 and the Xbox One back in January 2018, and on the PC in August 2018. So it's currently available on PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. And there's another Monster Hunter game, Monster Hunter Rise, on the Switch. So you can, if you're on Switch, you can't play Monster Hunter World, but you can play a different Monster Hunter game. This kind of goes back to what I was saying before about how I hate when franchises jump from one console to another. And when we were talking about our exclusives episode, because it's really annoying when you really love a franchise and suddenly it's taken away from you and given to somebody else. Monster Hunter is one of the most notorious franchises for that. They just jump around all over the place, and they'll release a game on this console and then a different one on that console. But that's neither here nor there, because we're talking about events today. So Monster Hunter World is actually really interesting in that it has done quite a few game collaborations with other games. So far, they've done Horizon Zero Dawn, Street Fighter V, Devil May Cry, Final Fantasy XIV, Assassin's Creed Origins, and Witcher 3. And when you play those events, they come up from time to time. Usually they release new ones. However, I do think they've done at least the Horizon Zero Dawn event more than once. So if you missed out on the first time, there's always a chance that these events come back and you can pick them up the second time when they come around. But basically, when you do these events, you might get some special stuff. So you might get some weapons from the game. For instance, if you're doing the Devil May Cry event, you might get Dante's swords or something like that. Or when you're doing the Horizon Zero Dawn event, you get an Aloy skin. So you can make your character look like Aloy. So I think that's really, really cool that they do these kind of in-game events like that. And what you have to do is you have to, you know, maybe complete a certain number of quests or do certain things to unlock this stuff. So I think that's a really cool way to draw players back in and make it interesting. But what it also does is it has timed events or timed quests. And what'll happen is from time to time, and I think they'll release the schedule beforehand, but basically they'll have special events that when you log into the game during those times, you can complete these quests and you might get some special things. Like you might get, in the case of the game collaborations, you might get some special skins. In regular events, you might have, you know, certain drop rates might be slightly higher. Or you might, if you complete the certain quests within the time, you might get special items that are very rare and harder to acquire. So I think this is kind of, I mean, these aren't like holidays per se, but I think this is a kind of an interesting way to keep people engaged. I mean, I feel if you're doing a live service game, this is the way you kind of have to do it, is just have these events that just regularly come up and give people a reason to keep coming back. I know a lot of games do, like Destiny always does their Halloween event, and they always do some kind of Christmas event. World of Warcraft is notorious for having tons and tons of different in-game holidays, which are all relevant to in-game lore, which coincidentally kind of line up with real-world events. But put their own little spin on it. And I think that this is kind of, it's interesting and it keeps people engaged. And especially in a game like, say, Monster Hunter, where the whole point is teamwork, it's really important that you keep the fan base or you keep the player base alive and active, because otherwise, you know, people who, and this is a problem I think that we have with a lot of games now, are going for this kind of games as a service model. But these games, when they come out, they're super popular. And this goes back to our episode of, do you get it on release or do you wait for it to, the complete version to come out? And some of these games, if you don't get it on release, you're not going to get the full experience, because you're basically running around and it's really hard to find people to play with. And this game is designed to be done as a team. So unless you have friends with you, you know, if you're playing, thankfully Monster Hunter World, I'm sure, I'm pretty sure is still pretty active, but you know, there are games where if you don't have a group of friends, it's going to be really hard to find matchmaking. And so, yeah, so this is a great way to keep that player base active and engaged, and, you know, so that you're not missing out if you join later. As for who is this game for, I would say people who enjoy your typical ARPGs.
What was your favorite event if you had to choose one from this game?
For me, it'd probably be the Horizon Zero Dawn event, because I am a huge fan of Horizon Zero Dawn. So the fact that you could get an Aloy skin for me is really cool.
I totally agree. And I realized as we're doing this topic, I'm like, yeah, when you first proposed the topic, I'm like, oh my God, I should do Warframe, because I played loads of Warframe events that gave you limited edition stuff. But let me pose your question, because that came up in the Warframe community, was that these events that offer in Warframe, they offered sometimes limited edition stuff that could change the way your particular Warframe or your character played and give you an advantage in PvE that made you stronger. And it doesn't affect other players really, but it does make you look cooler and do stuff. Do you think limited time events should offer limited rewards that affect gameplay?
Define affect gameplay. Because, I mean, in the case of the Horizon Zero Dawn, it was mostly just an Aloy skin. You still play basically the same. You just look like Aloy. It doesn't give you necessarily a play advantage. So in that sense. But there are sometimes not these game collaborations, but these smaller events where it'll say, like, okay, we're releasing this one monster, you know, is terrorizing go out and kill it, and you can get this monster tooth, and you can use that to upgrade to, you know, better weapons. If you miss the event, it's not easy to get that item. You know, that item was, maybe you can get it in the game, maybe you can't, but usually these events will kind of repeat. So if you miss it now, you might not get it for a while, but with the exception of the game collaborations, they do typically, it will come back at some point. And in that sense, I don't mind it so much. It is annoying if you, say, are on vacation 1 week when they're doing this one event that you've been waiting for a while. But knowing that it will come back later, I think I'm kind of okay with that. But yeah, like in the case of Warframe, I mean, if it's something that if you miss this event and this event is not coming back and that's the only way to get it, then I, on the one hand, I'm kind of like, it's kind of okay. But yeah, on the other hand, I'm kind of against it because it does promote elitism in game, and in a weird kind of elitism too, because it's the kind of thing where like, haha, I have this, I have all these things that you do not have because I do not have a life outside this game. That makes me better than you. And it's like, okay, so because I have a life, I'm being kind of punished in a way. You know what I mean? Like, I have things that I need to do. I have a job, I have a wife, you know, or kids, or whatever you got to do. And people who, like, yeah, it's a weird kind of elitism that I don't really see outside the gaming community. Maybe it exists, I just haven't been exposed to it. But yeah, it's a really weird situation.
Okay, and then moving on to our final game of the episode.
Yay!
This is another game that we have talked about, or that I have talked about, but today I have my own gameplay footage, which is Life is Strange. This is episode 2 that you'll be watching as I'm talking at the moment. I don't play a lot of story games, but just to summarize, this is a game published by Dotnod Entertainment. They actually have a new game out on the Epic Store, which is sort of in the same vein as this, a story game where you sort of walk around, make decisions. I'd like to give that a go at some point. It's about $34 at the moment. But this game is another game full of really cool single-player events. And I would even say more impactful events than Skyrim, more so than Dawn of War 2. But I actually wrote this down in the script because Adam put it in a nice way, is that in this game you have the power to reverse time and it allows you to see both sides of the coin. And that is awesome because, I mean, who wouldn't want to make a major life-changing decision and say, okay, if I do this, then this happens. If I do that, then that happens. And in this game, like particularly in the video that you're watching right now, in this particular scene, I'm looking for bottles, and with my friend Chloe in Life is Strange, she wants to shoot some bottles. And I'm not going to forward it all the way to the scene, but in that particular footage, so Chloe wants to shoot the bottles, and you can help her sort of shoot it. But at one point, she shoots bottles, and the bullet deflects off the bumper of something or some metal part and goes right into her stomach, and she dies. And then, you have the chance to, forward that back. And there are other stuff that, I'm not going to spoil the main story events, but the lots of events that with the power of time allows you to really experience them and really understand these events and connect with them on a personal level. And it is why, for me, these sort of major gameplay events are awesome. And Dotnod had really sort of hit the gold mine with the idea of reversing time and having a really personal story that everybody in sort of high school or middle school can sort of connect with, that having experiences with friends and things that are sort of life-changing and that kind of stuff.
So wait, you can let her die?
Well, no. When she dies, the game stops and it tells you to reverse time.
Oh, okay. Because I thought she was a major character where it was like, I was like, oh my God, what? I didn't know that. I didn't play that part of the game.
So it's not really a major event. That's why I was like, oh, thank God I still have this gameplay footage. But it's an event that sort of illustrates the point, because from episode 1 to episode 2 to episode 3, and she's still there. But in this event, you're like, oh my God, this is Max's best friend. And then suddenly you see her, blood coming out of her stomach because she shot herself while playing with a gun in a junkyard.
Right. And I'm sure that has an impact on their relationship on some level, even if she technically doesn't remember it because time was rewound after she did it and she has no memory of it.
But exactly.
I'm sure that has makes the main character a little more defensive and stuff like that. Or changes, like, well, this person's kind of crazy. All right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how a single event can just have a huge difference depending on if it goes, you know, left or right, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a massive, like, a experiment in, you know, in linear time and all that sort of stuff. It's fun.
So just out of curiosity, how much of this game would you say is up to the player in terms of guiding the story, and how much would you say is actually guided for us? Like, for example, this character cannot die. The plot of the story does not allow her to die, so you have to rewind and redo that scene. But how many different events, like, what percentage of you say is guided by the game telling us, like, this is the direction it has to go in? And how much would you say is actually dependent or will change based on our decisions? Like, is it mostly guided and we have a few small decisions, or is it actually extremely broad?
It's mostly guided, I will say. Yeah, I would say it's 60% guided.
Okay, that's still quite a bit of freedom.
Yeah, not totally. I mean, it's, there are lots of events where you do have a choice, and at the end of each episode, you get to see what most people did. So you can sort of see, like, yeah, there are multiple, like, I mean, there at the end of each episode, I've seen at least 4 pages of major decisions that, you know, you get to see what other people did or most people did in the game. And it's interesting.
And these decisions, do they only impact their individual chapters, or are they actually, like, something that a decision you make in, say, chapter 2 could impact something in chapter, say, 5?
That much I don't know, because I've only played the first 3 episodes so far, and I unfortunately won't be playing anymore because Cyberpunk will be out tomorrow. No, ooh. Thursday.
So fast.
Yes.
Finally, 2077 has arrived.
So I started preloading it last night, and then I stopped, and then started preloading this morning when I wake up, and I've still stopped, and I'll finish preloading after the memorable music episode today.
All right, well, you're going to have to let me know how that goes, because that's definitely in my maybe box. So
I'll talk a little bit about it in the news segment, because I did get some news this morning that's going to change things.
Ooh, all right. Okay. Well, we'll leave that for later. Okay, so moving on to my final game, which is Final Fantasy XIV. Beautiful. So Final Fantasy XIV, I've talked about it a little bit before, but I talked about the game. Now I'm going to be talking specifically about events. So just a quick recap. It's published by Square Enix. It originally released in 2013. We are now on expansion 3? All right, so it is available on PC and PlayStation, maybe someday on the Xbox, but no official news on that anytime soon. So probably not for a good while. Now, to the events, this is an MMO, and MMOs are, as you know, live service as you can get. So these guys have quite a few events, and Final Fantasy 14 is, you know, a lot of MMOs these days are actually, you buy it once, and then you can play it as much as you want. There's no subscription or anything like that. But Final Fantasy 14 does have one. But you do get what you pay for with these events, because they put a lot of time and effort into these events. And, of course, regular updates and patches and that sort of thing. So that's paying for that as well. But in Final Fantasy 14, they have 8 major holidays. And those major holidays are Heaven's Turn, which is the equivalent of Lunar New Year. They have Valentine's Day, which is Valentine's Day. Little Ladies Day, which is a cherry blossom festival, which is based off the cherry blossom festival. Hatching Tide, which is based off of Easter. Moonfire Fair, which is kind of a summer festival. The Rising, which is Final Fantasy XIV's birthday. So they actually have an in-game holiday based on the birthday of the game. All Saints Wake, which is the equivalent of Halloween. And Starlight Celebration, which is the equivalent of Christmas. So as you go through the real world year, you will be having these events every few months and stuff. And so they will be releasing new content every single time. A lot of times what they do is they release housing items. So in the game, you can buy a house, or you can at least try to if you can find one, because typically there aren't too many open plots these days. But You can buy housing items to decorate your home. So like at the Starlight Celebration, you can get, you know, Christmas trees and that sort of wreaths and that sort of thing. So if you want to decorate your house for Christmas, you can legitimately in-game decorate your house for Christmas. They also have glamours, which are basically clothing items that allow you to kind of customize the look of your characters. So they give you quite a bit of stuff there, and some of it's really cool. They give you mounts and stuff like that. I think this year they didn't do a Halloween event. They didn't do All Saints Wake due to COVID-19. I think they were a little bit behind on production, so they actually had to skip the holiday. But last year they actually gave you a mount, so that was actually really, really cool. And then they have their non-holiday events, which sometimes they'll do game collaborations. They've done one with Yo-Kai Watch, Dragon Quest X, Monster Hunter World, which I mentioned Monster Hunter World did a game collaboration with Final Fantasy 14 as well. They also have one with Final Fantasies 11, 13, and 15. So they've had collaborations with all those as well. And at some point, they'll probably do one with Final Fantasy 7 Remake, but they haven't done it yet. They also have Make It Rain, which is a special event where in-game, there's kind of an in-game theme park called Gold Saucer, and Make It Rain is an event where basically anything you do there doubles your prize winnings, so it's kind of like a casino. So if you go, you know, you can get twice as much, or at least 50% or however much more, you can get more of these in-game kind of currency. And one of the other ones that's my personal favorite is the Moogle Treasure Trove. So what they've been doing with the last few patches is about a month before the patch or so, they'll release this Innerant Moogle. He's this little kind of floating cat thing with a pom-pom on his head. And he'll show up and he'll basically tell you to run old content. So you run old dungeons, you run old trials, you know, all these things. All this older content that you basically have been skipping over since you were, you know, no longer a new player. And if you run those, you get these special tomestones, which are basically another form of currency in the game. And you can turn those into him for not exclusive content, but difficult to find content. So, for example, if you're fighting a certain boss, they might have a drop rate of maybe, I don't know, 2% on a certain mount or something. So if you want to get this special bird, you have to fight this boss, and this boss has, you know, maybe a 5% chance of dropping this mount, and then after he drops it, you're competing with 8 other people in your party to try to get that mount, you know. So then you have to basically do a lottery for it. Well, if you do these Moogle Treasure Trove things, you can just run old content, and then you'll build up these things, and you can just buy it using that currency. So I think that's actually really, really cool, because A, for people that aren't these hardcore raiders or people that aren't hardcore players to do this really extreme content can still kind of access a lot of these things. And I know, again, there is elitism in the community that think that people should not be allowed to have these things unless they've completed this content. But this is a way for these people to get this content. They do have to grind for it, though. And they do have to get lucky in the sense that it has to be on the list of things that the Moogle is selling this time. But it's also great for new players because it encourages older players to run old content. And so that means for newer players that haven't been playing through these things or that need to do these things, now there's a lot of people running through helping them out because, you know, I, as an older player, am trying to grind for these tombstones. You, as a new player, need to complete this content because that's part of your journey. So, you know, it kind of brings a little bit of camaraderie to the gaming community. So I think that's really, really cool. And yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. And they also find ways to reincorporate old content that people have been avoiding as well. The Yo-Kai Watch event, which is going on right now, actually, you get to run through these things called Fates, which I have not been doing for a long, long, long time because based on my level, they were just kind of a waste of my time. But now I can rush off and, you know, just bring back some of these old content. So I think it's really cool. I like the fact that they have the holidays in game. You know, it always gives you something to look forward to. And whenever a new holiday comes out, I'm always super excited. And I'm like, oh, what are they going to release this time? Is it going to be new clothing or a new mount? Or is it just going to be a poster to put on my wall? I don't know. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really like it. So Final Fantasy 14 is for people that like MMOs. But these events specifically are for people who like glamour and housing items. So if you want to make yourself or your home pretty, go ahead and do that.
Okay. I really like the idea of the Moogle events. I think Warframe has been moving in that direction to bring back stuff that before was limited and sort of say, hey, if you want to get this, now is the time to get it. But it's still, like you said, you can get to rerun old stuff and you can build up stuff and buy it yourself, which I think is something that from the few multiplayer games I have played, they have not done that, so that there is content that is gated off by saying, hey, and I complained to you about this before, that you have to have 4 people to do this, or have to have 3 people, or you have to have people of a certain level in order to get this stuff and get this content, which is fine. I know there is supposed to be in-game content, but it shouldn't be at the expense of middle-aged gamers who say, hey, sorry, you and your friends don't work at the same times or can't play at the same time, so you can't play this game. That, I think, goes back to our accessibility talk. But Final Fantasy 14, Jesus Christ, that is a lot of events.
Yeah, no, they have a lot of events. They're really busy. They do a really good job of making sure that all the everything's, there's always something to do. So that's always great. And if you get a chance, I would highly recommend checking out some of their old April Fool's shenanigans. So pretty much every April Fool's, they'll release some kind of video. So if you can check out some of their videos, some of them are pretty funny, the stuff that they've released. I think my favorite, though, was a couple years ago for April Fool's, they released the companion app. So they said that there was going to be a companion app for smartphones. And they did end up actually releasing a real companion app. But the one that they were advertising was mostly for gathering. So, you know, in a lot of these games, you have mining, you have, you know, botany, where you can collect plants and that sort of, you know, harvesting, that sort of thing. So they created a little trailer for their harvesting app. And basically what they would do is they take a phone, put it on a selfie stick, and then they have people like walking into the park and like pretending to mine and stuff like that. So they were saying it was going to be like a Pokemon Go thing. So you're walking around in the real world and, you know, you're actually pretending to mine, or you're swinging your phone into a tree as an axe, you know, to harvest real plants and stuff.
That sounds pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch the video, it's just hilarious. It just looks like incredibly stupid. But like, it came out right after Pokemon Go, and it was one of those things where people were like, is this a legit thing? Because I could see people actually doing this, but it just looks so ridiculously dumb. But yeah, it was pretty clever. I thought it was great. So check out their April Fool's things. And actually, a lot of games have some great April Fool's stuff. So go ahead and check those out. I was reading online, some people were talking about, what's it called? Guild Wars 2. And one year for April Fool's, they basically turned every character's head into a bobblehead. So as you ran around on that one day, all their heads were just kind of bobbling around. And it was just for one day, just this really, really weird thing. But, you know, people have a lot of fun with it. So.
And with that, we will sign off. All right. And thanks for watching and listening and subscribing and liking. If you haven't already done so, you know people who are interested in our content, please follow us on social media. Have a look at our Facebook, Middle Age Gaming 2020. On there, you'll find links to Twitch, to Instagram, to Twitter, to YouTube. Follow whatever you think is best for you.
Yeah, and make sure that you email us, because we love getting emails, or at least we would if we ever got them. So please go ahead and send us emails. We would be very happy to have those. And, you know, make sure that you watch our things. And even if you don't enjoy our content, feel free to open up YouTube in the background and just let it play while you're not watching, because that'll get us some clicks and views. So whatever you can do to help us out. Whatever you can do to help us out. No, we know that you're all watching this because you love the content. So, you know, thank you for coming. Feel free to contact us. We love getting feedback. If you have ideas of future episodes for things you would like us to discuss, or certain, we like to do themes when we review games, like today is events. We've already done kind of a Thanksgiving theme and stuff like that. So if you have an idea of a theme you'd like us to cover, feel free to give us some ideas, and we'd be more than happy to cover that for you.
See you soon.
See you soon.